Satyagraha in the Scientific Age, Chapter 10. Pyarelal ji has stated in his book, The Last Phase, that Gandhiji used to confess that his acquaintance with Satyagraha was only very meager. The science of Satyagraha is very profound and much research has to be undertaken about it. This is not merely modesty on Gandhiji's part. This is a statement of fact. Whatever experiments we have made with Satyagraha have been like groping in the dark. No clear light had been available to us. Of course, the little glimmerings of light that were vouchsafed us help us to go ahead. I have said a few things before on the role of Satyagraha in democracy. Today, I shall not talk from the point of view of democracy. Democracy is a small affair. Ours is the age not of democracy alone, but also of science. I said in one discourse that there are three forces that shape human life. These three forces are science, self-knowledge, and speech. Many are of the opinion that it is the great politicians who influence life the most. Babur influenced life in India. So also did Alexander the Great and Lord Clive. But this is an erroneous notion. It was science that had made great headways in Europe during the days of Lord Clive, that helped the ascendancy of England. She had better ships than India had. Shivaji used to buy swords from the Portuguese. The invasions of Alexander the Great and Babur, as well as the voyages of Marco Polo and Columbus, were made possible by science. Self-knowledge teaches man to make the best use of science. The use that an age makes of science corresponds to the measure of self-knowledge attained during that age. The power of speech as expressed in literature mediates between science and self-knowledge. Today, I shall talk to you about the form Satyagraha should take in this age of science. When an opponent approaches us with a rod in hand, anyone kind and merciful amongst us could exercise an influence upon him and make him see that the use of the rod was sheer folly. As Valmiki, the robber, was transformed while attacking Narada with an axe, so also could our opponent change for the better. But what could be done when the enemy drops bombs from an aeroplane or by simply pressing a switch in the safety of his own room? How could Satyagraha be undertaken under such circumstances? What could the Satyagrahi achieve in this case with the kindness of his look and the softness of his voice? With the progress of science, we are called upon to go deep into the spirit. We are to reach even greater depths than those attained by men in days past. Science has brought it within the power of a few to destroy the universe while sitting in their own corners. We too have to develop the might of Satyagraha in such a way that we could cast our influence on the entire world. There is no other way left open for Satyagraha. I do not consider this mysticism. The realization experienced by the mystics or the devotee through meditation is not the ultimate thing. It amounts to a consolation. God consoles the devotee in accordance with his desire. One misses the still deeper experience and realization if one remains content with such consolations, treating the latter as amounting to direct realization. Mysticism, no doubt, is a great thing, for it is certainly a great achievement to establish direct contact with the unknown universe. but the power that it yields is not sufficient for our present purpose. We have today to discover the power which could counteract the destructive power of the atom. This power, however, we cannot acquire so long as we are confined to the limits of the mental world. Whenever I have meditated on this problem, the local issues about state borders, languages, religions of communities have seemed insignificant by comparison. After all this development of the science, we ought to be able to grasp the truth that mind cannot be transformed with the aid of a process that is itself mental. But if we leave mind behind and go ahead, mind would die of itself. There would then be no question of simply changing it. When speaking of change of heart, we think as if we are to help a man to change for the better by getting rid of his faults. I am, however, thinking of proceeding with the supposition that there is no mind at all. The time-worn methods are not of much usage in this age of science. When I say all these things, people complain that Vinoba has turned a follower of Sri Aurobindo. This thought, however, is not new in me. The old methods of diplomacy and the traditional literature would not help us now. We must have to adopt new policies. I had even said that true religion has not yet been built up, for we did not have the proper foundation needed for that purpose. In the days of yore, there was no science, and people accepted on faith the few things the rishis had apprehended by meditation. Certain beliefs, no doubt, have come to stay as a consequence, but those beliefs have not been adequately founded. This is the fate of principles like truth and non-violence. People consider truth desirable, but not so under all circumstances. Man has not accepted truth in the same spirit in which the mason follows the laws of geometry. This means that an inviolable law of truth has not yet been set up. True religion, therefore, has not been built up. Science alone would provide the foundation for religion. What passes today for religion is confined to the mental sphere. This has to be transcended before true religion could be established. There would then be harmony and not conflict between science and religion. Concerned as I am with these issues, I am proceeding towards a state of spiritual quiescence or nivritti. Such nivritti, however, is not opposed to pravritti or world affirmation. Nivritti or world negation that is so opposed is also itself another kind of affirmation or pravritti. I am, however, searching for that power with which to counteract the destructive power of the atom. That power can only be, it so seems to me, the power of Satyagraha. Only a few are investigating into the secrets of atomic power, but their discoveries would be available for use by the common man. One person had discovered electricity, but it is now used by all. Likewise, spiritual power could be discovered only by an individual, but harnessed for the good of all. Of what use could Satyagraha be in the field of international affairs? Satyagraha represents a spiritual power. It is not a physical power, neither is it mental. Science, by its very nature, subordinates the human mind. We have to ascend to the level of the supermind if we are to get to know this power of Satyagraha. If you intend to solve the international problems by way of Satyagraha and not through popular opinion or governmental agencies, then you would have to raise yourselves to the supramental level. My contacts with the people during the Bhutan pilgrimage have convinced me that the minds of men are basically alike. Everywhere, human mind is in the same stage of development. We should, therefore, acquire such power as could influence the whole world while being manifested in an individual soul. This is possible when the individual, in his own life, transcends the limits of mind and attains to the supramental level of consciousness. Usmanabad, 12th of June, 1958.